You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Pastor Terry Jones, the president and founder of Stand Up America Now. Pastor Jones, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Pastor Jones, the last time we spoke was about, 2.5 years ago, and you were in the middle of the Burn the Quran display that you were going to do, then you didn't, and then you were scheduled to do it, and you actually put the Quran on trial, and we went through that whole process and your time in Germany, and we spoke about the troubles that your church was experiencing with the mortgage, with the insurance, with the website. We also spoke about the death threat you were receiving, and I imagine with what's happening now, you probably have been receiving a few more. Let me ask you, before I get into the latest, I guess we can call it an imbroglio here, with angering Muslims worldwide, has anything changed as far as the last time we spoke? Because you were talking about relocating to a different town, you didn't need that big building, and they were coming after you with the mortgage, they were canceling your insurance, they were going after your website. Has anything changed in those regards?
None of that has changed. Those problems we still have. Our property insurance here has been canceled several times. We did have the property up for sale. In fact, we had a contract on the property to sell it, but I don't know what happened. But anyway, the people who were going to buy the property could not come up with the money. So as far as that goes, nothing has changed. We're actually still here. We're still actually wanting to move from this location, and we've continued on. And as you said, of course, through the recent events that have taken place, we have received now another, whatever, 36 death threats, and there's been another reward put on my life. There's the old one that is still active for $2.4 million, and since our activity right now, there's been a new one put on there for $100,000. We meet with the FBI on a regular basis, and they inform us of new death threats. Yeah, we're basically pretty much doing the same thing, and the death threats and conditions around that also have not changed.
You and members of the church are armed, right?
Yes, correct, correct. I am armed. Several other members, actually, at all times. I have my handgun with me at all times, yes.
I remember the last time we spoke, you had someone come over and give you some training and, I guess, hand-to-hand combat and how to use the weapon and so on and so forth. So I guess that's still something that's going on because the death threats keep piling up, right?
Yeah, that's true. Actually, that is still going on. In fact, actually, we have the same guy scheduled to come by this afternoon. He had come by the church the other day and had some more ideas and tips for us. So actually, even today, he's coming by just to give us a few more tips on how to handle our gun properly and defend ourselves. Because, of course, as you can imagine, as a pastor, I never had anything to do with firearms. I never imagined that I ever would. So, of course, I was at one time very ignorant in that area.
One of the things we talked about was how the church went from whatever size it was, I can't quite remember right now, but down to basically hardly anybody. Has it regained a bit of a following? Are there more members of the church, or is it just a handful as it was 2.5 years ago?
That has basically stayed the same. What has actually changed drastically is the number of people who follow us, let's say, or the number of people who are in agreement with either at times what we do, or definitely in agreement with our message. That has changed drastically. When we first started this in 2009, and then, of course, the big event in 2010, we got a lot of very, very negative feedback, and, of course, a lot of very negative publicity. Actually, that has changed because we have done many, many rallies around America, and we have spoken and we speak out on several other subjects, not only Islam. It definitely, as far as people standing with us and the attitude towards us, that has changed drastically. As far as the size of the church, that has not changed. And that is probably not likely to change because what we do is not really something that promotes church growth, for one thing. And of course, it's definitely dangerous when you have bomb threats here, when you have the amount of death threats that we have, and very few people are willing to associate with us on that type of a personal level where they would actually come to the church and be a member of the church. So that has not changed and probably is not likely to change.
Basically, nothing has changed except, as you say, you've gained a lot more supporters.
Right, and we have continued on, of course, in our activities concerning Islam, trying to raise an awareness of that, trying to help out the Coptic community. As you probably know, I've got connections there in California. I did and still do a television program out there in Santa Ana, California, with a Coptic television station, satellite television, that broadcasts around the world. So we are definitely very active. Of course, we've spoken out, as you probably are aware of, concerning many subjects concerning President Obama. So yeah, we have certainly maintained our status as far as being very active.
Right, and controversial. Do you know how many supporters you might have? Is there a way to count them?
There's actually no way of counting them, but of course, through our contacts here with my presidential campaign, we would easily have thousands because our Facebooks are definitely up to, I think, altogether around 8,000 or 9,000. We just did International Judge Mohammed Day here on September the 11th, and we had our online television program there where I put Mohammed on trial and pointed out different aspects of his life. I think we had at that time at least 10,000 or more viewers, and just our contacts around the world. We're going up to Canada here in October to do something there with some Hindus there concerning Islam. We have been invited to England to speak there, and then we got banned. I was invited to Germany to speak, and shortly after that, just a few days ago, the German government has banned me, so there is definitely support. We got an email this morning, which we get pretty regularly from Australia. They have quite a large Muslim population there and also a very large problem. We got emails this morning from there in support, so definitely the support is out there.
Right. Your ideas are resonating with a lot of people across the planet. How did Mohammed do at the trial?
Mohammed did not do well, as you can imagine. As we studied his life, I brought forth 43 different points. And there's no doubt Mohammed did not lead a life that you would think his lifestyle and what he did is a characteristic of a prophet, let's say of a man of peace. Definitely his life was not like that. He had a very tragical life. And as we know, especially towards the end of his life, when he wrote the Quran, of course, in basically two different sections, if you want to call it. He wrote it when he was in Mecca. He wrote one version. That's where you find most of the peaceful verses, and then he wrote the other version, the later version in Medina, and that's where, of course, the Quran becomes very, very violent. And Muhammad himself led a very, very violent life. The things that we brought forth were not things that we made up. These are things out of either the Quran, the Hadiths, in other words, out of Islamic history. Muhammad himself, on his deathbed in 632, gave the command to his followers to cleanse the Arabian Peninsula of all non-believers. So indeed, he did lead a pretty violent life. So he was definitely found guilty. And at the end of that trial, we had also a punishment.
And what was that?
The punishment that we had was we burned an image of Muhammad. In other words, we had put together a small doll dressed as Muhammad as a symbol of Muhammad. And, of course, we also burned the Quran again because you cannot separate the Quran or Muhammad from the Quran. So at that time, we burned the image of Muhammad and the image of the Quran or the Quran itself.
And I remember last time, 2.5 years ago, I guess that was the first time you put the Quran on trial, if my memory serves me correctly, and you did burn it. And I think the fire authorities there in Gainesville, they fined you or they requested that you get some kind of a permit to burn the book and now the effigy. Did you have to do that again?
No, we did not do that this time. The story is a little bit like that. In other words, when we first were going to burn the Quran in, 2010, they required for us to get a burn permit. We applied for a burn permit and they turned us down. In 2011, when we put the Quran on trial on March the 20th, we had, of course, as you know, we had a four-hour trial in Arabic and in English. We burned the Quran inside of our church building, so there was no permit necessary. The next time that we burned the Quran was actually this year in April in protest of the imprisonment of Pastor Youssef. I guess you're familiar with that. He was a pastor in Iran who has been in prison. I think he's now been released for over 900 days for having converted from Islam to Christianity. We demanded that Iran release him. They did not do it. They did later do it, but they did not do it within that period of time. So then we called for the worldwide burning of Qurans and images of Muhammad. At that time, we had a public ceremony here out front with speakers, and then we burned an image of Muhammad and the Quran. At that time, we did that illegally without a burn permit. Probably that time you're talking about, the fire department came here. As we did it, they came and demanded that we put it out, which we did, and then they fined us, I believe, $300. This last time when we burned the Quran on September the 11th, what we simply did was we burned it here, again, outside, but behind the building without any kind of big announcement or ceremony because it was going online in conjunction with the trial. So they didn't even know that we burned it, so nobody came and showed up.
Remember the good old days in America when you could burn whatever you want, nobody bothered you?
Yeah, that's true. They have more and more laws.
Absolutely. And as you mentioned, you're running for president. How's that going?
It's going okay, too. We have got enough electors in several states to be a write-in candidate anyway. As you can imagine, of course, I mean, we have no chance to actually win. And that was not necessarily our purpose. It would be nice to win. But we wanted to raise an awareness of the condition of America. I may have told you this last time, but I spent, of course, 30 years in Europe as a missionary. When I came back to America, I was horrified by the moral, spiritual, and economical condition of America. And when I hear the politicians talking, it's just exactly that. They're politicians. They know how to tell the American people what they want to hear and how to wave the flag and go, rah, 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 we're the greatest. Gets Americans all excited, and they start waving the flag and say, yeah, yeah, rah, 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 we're the greatest. We're going to vote for you. But we don't really deal with the issues. I mean, the real truth is that the country's bankrupt. The real truth is we're $16 trillion in debt. Our debt has exceeded our gross national product. Our own government is predicting, I believe, $25 trillion. I think in year 2025, they're predicting the collapse of our economy. We have a terrible problem with our illegals. We're just in absolutely terrible, terrible condition, and we have waited so long. We have been overspending for, 40 years. We waited so long that now, in order to fix the situation, if that's possible, which it probably is, in order to fix it, it's going to be very painful. And see, it's the pain that nobody wants to endure and nobody wants to talk about. And that's what our politicians are doing, that they're not telling the American people, hey, we've got to fix this at all costs. And that means that we've got to touch a few holy cows, like the military, like this program or that program. We are just simply going to have to do it, because if we continue to do what we're doing, in other words, overspend, if we continue to allow the Federal Reserve, which of course is not federal in the first place, just to allow them to continue to print money, which all it does is cause our money to be worth less and less money, we are simply going to go down the tube. We have reached almost the point of no return. If we have taken the splinter out, we wouldn't have this problem. But we didn't take the splinter out, and now we have gangrene. We didn't take care of the gangrene, so now the only thing that we can do to actually save the body is to cut off the hand. And that's what politicians are not saying. So that's basically why we entered, to try to somehow wake up America, raise an awareness of the condition that we are in. Otherwise, we're definitely headed for a total collapse of our economy. And when you look around the world and you look at Europe, they're not in much better condition.
Yeah, I'm sure that the majority of listeners who are up on the news would agree with you 100%. I know I do.
Yeah.
Now, this movie that came out just recently.
We've been contacted, of course, there by the director, I guess now about 5 weeks ago. He wanted us to promote the movie and that type of thing. That basically was our involvement. And since then, we have contact with him basically on a daily basis, because I know how it is when you stand up and speak out. Everybody pretty much blackballs you or forsakes you. So I called him up and offered him our assistance and help. So we are in a constant contact with him. As far as I know, the movie is not out. He has the movie himself. What is out is the trailer, the 14-minute trailer. And actually, the 14-minute trailer has been out a long time, or quite a while. And it's actually the 14-minute trailer that we are involved in and caused the controversy. I think the controversy was first caused or started because, I believe, someone in Egypt, we have a lot of contact with Egypt and the Coptic Christians, someone in Egypt, I believe, brought that to the Muslims' attention over there, along with our picture and a couple of more friends of ours. That's how we got sort of brought into contact with that. And then we were going to show that trailer on September the 11th at the end of our trial, which we have now shown the trailer or brought the trailer out ourselves. And then, of course, because of our involvement with the trailer, with the producer, and with other people that were involved in the movie and our stand against Islam, then, of course, we got heavily involved or associated with the whole situation.
Is that the fella Abdel Mahdi that you're talking about?
I actually don't even know his name. I know he goes by the name of Sam Basile. I think in the meantime, he has revealed his name. I know when we first talked to him, he went by that name, and he would not even tell us his real name when my staff talked to him. I actually have talked to him now in the meantime several times, and I have never even asked him his real name. I think the last time I talked to him was yesterday, and when he called me, he said some name, but I'm not very good with those Middle East Arab type of names, so I don't even recall what he called himself, and for me, that wasn't actually really that important, so I don't even know his real name. He has a very strong Coptic accent, but maybe it's also Israeli. I don't know.
Okay. That trailer, I was able to watch, not the whole thing, a few minutes of it, because I considered are completely ridiculous. I know it was just different parts of this movie, but I didn't really understand it, and I really don't have that much time that I could spend on stuff like that, so I just turned it off. But, of course, it didn't get me angry, but I'm not a Muslim. I'm looking at an article on Al Jazeera, and it just came out yesterday. Egypt pursues makers of anti-Islam video. Arrest warrant issued for 7 Egyptian Coptic Christians and you.
Correct.
Pastor Jones, and the picture of you with, I guess, they X'd out your face, and they got a cross there, and they're coming after you again, and of course, it mentions just what you said, that you were contacted to promote this film, so you didn't even know about this one. I think the trailer first came out in July. Nobody really noticed it, but then for some reason, there was a push to promote it, so they contacted you, you didn't contact them. Did you even know about the trailer in July?
No. I just found out about that. Like I said, I guess this was around 5 weeks ago now.
And you have the actual trailer up on your website?
Yes, yes, yes. We have sent that out in a press release, and yeah, we do have that out.
And is that the Stand Up America Now website or the Dove World?
No, it would be standupamericanow.org.
And so in here it says that the Egyptian prosecutor's office actually has issued an arrest warrant for you, and you're not in Egypt, so it's pretty much symbolic, as it says in the article. However, if somehow they do get their hands on you, they say that you could face the death penalty there?
Yep.
And just like everything else, you're kind of just brushing it off, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we pretty much just brush off. I understand they're trying to do that in Pakistan, too. We don't take really very seriously. I mean, I think, of course, that's an example of Islam. They definitely have no tolerance of any other type of religion. They have no tolerance of any criticism whatsoever of Muhammad, the Quran, or even Sharia. So it's definitely not surprising. So that particular thing, we don't take that serious. Of course, the death threats, we do take serious. They come in all the time. They're very numerous. And Islam doesn't always make good, of course, on their threats. They are a religion of intimidation and fear, but at the same time, they also do violent acts. So the death threats, we, of course, do take very seriously and try to take the necessary precautions.
Okay. And right now, as we speak, there are violent eruptions across the Muslim world where they're attacking non-Muslims and they're attacking embassies and consulates. What do you think differentiates Muslims in general from, for example, Christians? Because as we spoke about last time, if I decided that I wanted to burn the Bible and I brought this up to you, I asked you, what do you think would happen? You said that, well, most Christians would probably just pray for you, right?
Yes, sir, correct. Yeah, I think there's a very clear difference. I mean, we've had that happen here in our driveway. People have pulled up and they burned our Bible right here in our driveway. People have indeed burned the American flag, the Bible around the world. Christianity has been made fun of. I think who was it? Monty Python? Didn't they make a movie, The Life of Brian or something, that depicted Jesus in a very, very bad way? So, I mean, that is, I think, freedom of speech. And I think criticism and having your feelings heard and being offended, that's just part of a free society. Those things you cannot avoid. In fact, things we don't want to avoid. We have to maintain our freedom of speech. That is the very cornerstone of a free society. I think the very difference is, if you study a little bit of Islam, Muhammad's life, and you look at the 1400-year history of Islam, which is very violent, and you look at Christianity and Jesus, I think you see a very clear difference in the foundation. The foundation of Islam seems to be revenge. You don't find, not that I speak Arabic, but I have a lot of Coptic friends and a lot of people who do speak Arabic. You don't find in the Quran, even in the makeup there, you don't find words like forgiveness. It's not really part of that culture somehow, and not part of the religion. Muhammad himself, on his deathbed, as I said, told his believers to go out and cleanse the Arabian Peninsula of all non-believers. And Jesus, as he was on the cross, he cries out and says, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. So actually, it seems to be a very clear difference between Islam and Christianity is whenever Islam is offended, they react in retaliation. When Christianity is offended, they react and are taught anyway to react, their feelings are also hurt. We are also offended when the Holy Bible is burned, which we consider to be also the Word of God. But we're taught to forgive, and we're taught to pray for our enemies. And that's sort of like the foundation of Christianity. So I think between Islam and Christianity, there is a very, very big difference.
And if Islam stays as it is, which it probably will because the prophet's no longer here, then it seems like Christianity and Islam and Judaism will never get together, will never see eye to eye. There will always be problems, right?
I think there will basically always be problems. I think, for one thing, I think it's very clear that Islam is simply not compatible to Western society and Western thinking. It's just not, because I think one of the major cornerstones of Western society is, of course, the First Amendment, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of religion, and those things are simply void in Islam. So Islam and the Western world are not compatible, no.
Right. Do you have any affiliation with this person? I don't even know if you've ever heard of her, but Pamela Geller?
We definitely know who that is, of course. Of course, Pamela Geller, Robert Spencer, those are people that speak out concerning Islam, yes.
Are you affiliated with her in any way?
We are not affiliated with them. No, we are not.
Okay. And you're not affiliated with anybody, really. As you said earlier, just you and your church, you folks are the ones that are taking this in. You're not affiliated with Media Christ at all?
No. Like I said, we have had a lot of contact and affiliation with the Coptic world. I mean, basically all of the Coptic organizations in America, they all support us. Basically, we have a lot of support, like I said, through people who actually have experienced Islam. It's very sad that the people that you mentioned, we have contacted Pamela Geller many times. We've contacted Robert Spencer many times. We have contacted, what is the other really big organization, Act for America. We've been to their meetings. We have reached out to basically everybody that we can reach out to. And it's very sad all of these people are not willing to work with us. It's not that they don't agree with us. Of course they do. They, of course, don't agree with our methods. But I don't know. I think somehow we could learn from Islam. They stand together. And I've heard many Islamic leaders say that they would never, never, never condemn any Muslim, no matter what he does, an act of terror, no matter what. It's just really a shame that we cannot unite together, even if we don't agree with everything. I don't really think that's necessary. I understand why people don't necessarily agree sometimes with my method. That is fine, but I think we can still unite together under a common goal of speaking out against radical Islam, or let's say some other subject that we agree upon. For example, we're doing that rally up there in Canada with the Hindus. We don't agree with the Hindu religion. They don't agree with Christianity, but we're not coming together as a religious organization agreeing on religious views. We're coming together to try to stop this cancer and this evil that is called radical Islam. So I think it's very sad that we allow issues to divide us when other issues are actually much more important.
Mm-hmm. Of course, there have been several people who have been murdered over this film, most notably the ambassador there in Benghazi, in Libya. When you heard about this, how did that make you feel?
Yeah, that's, of course, absolutely appalling. That is absolutely terrible, and I definitely feel for the families. I understand how that is. I was married very, very young, and shortly after our 25th wedding anniversary, my wife just suddenly died of a heart attack at a very early age. So I understand how that is to lose someone that you care about and for someone to be taken away, let's say, long before their time. I think it's absolutely horrifying and terrible. I just think a lot of times in the West, we continue, now for whatever reason, humanism, political correctness, we point the finger in the wrong direction. We have to point the finger in the direction of radical Islam. And what we have to also remember, this type of thing is very tragical, of course, for the families. It's very tragical, of course, for us as Americans. And Americans, of course, are very much up in arms because an ambassador was killed, which of course it should be. But at the same time, we should have been up in arms a long time ago. Islam has been doing this for 1,400 years. The stories that I hear from my friends, Coptic friends, who still have relatives over in Egypt and other countries, it's absolutely horrifying what Islam does. This is not anything new. I mean, quite honestly, we could have been horrified, outraged a long, long time ago. But of course, the killing of the U.S. ambassador, that was very tragical, terrible.
Yesterday, there were two stories about what you're talking about. And if listeners are not aware of this, then they could simply go to the internet and look it up. But a father in Pakistan tied his daughter to a tree and hacked her to death with an axe because he was ashamed she worked in a beauty salon.
Yeah.
A Muslim woman, I believe this is in the UK, she was beaten with a walking stick in a brutal exorcism by her husband and family, who were convinced she was possessed by a demon. And this is just from yesterday. So for the benefit of the listeners, what Pastor Jones is talking about is all over the internet, at least a couple of times a week, not every day, at least what's publicized, but pretty much a couple of times a week you can find stories like this. And of course, this does happen. Let's say, for example, I say, well, you know, I'm a big fan of the First Amendment. I agree with what you're doing. I think that makes sense. You should be allowed to say whatever you want. You'd be able to talk about issues like this. But you know that it's going to incite these people because for some reason they seem to be very unstable and they're not able to reason with stuff like this and they're going to get violent. Would it make sense to then approach it in a different way instead of inciting them? Because obviously they can't handle it. What would you say to that?
I would say that I think that's definitely correct. And personally, I have the opinion that the way we do it is not the best. I think the best way to do it is diplomacy. The best way to do it is to try to sit down and discuss things, try to talk about things. The best way to do it, which doesn't seem to work a lot of times in the Middle East, but anyway, I think definitely the best way to do it is to do as we do in the West, try to sit down calmly, try to discuss something, try to have a reasonable, not a bad, but say a reasonable compromise, something that everyone can live with, and then we move forward. That just doesn't seem to be the mentality in the Middle East. And I know that many, many people use that approach. Let's say the people that you have even mentioned there, Pamela Geller, Robert Spencer. Robert Spencer is a very, very intelligent person. He's written several books, very, very good at discussing the Quran and Sharia and Islam. And I think all of those ways are extremely valid and should be used. I just think sometimes when those ways don't work, and they have not worked for 1,400 years, that sometimes a more direct, in-your-face, radical approach, I think it sometimes needs to be done. And I think our society needs to allow for that. This is not an everyday thing, but I think sometimes that has to happen. And if you look even at the life of Jesus, I mean, he definitely never led any raids and killed people like Muhammad. Most of the time, he was very, very peaceful. But sometimes he got upset. The people in the temple, he did not ask them to leave. He actually damaged their own private property and overturned the money changers, overturned the tables. So I basically agree. I just think that for our method, there is also room because it does, to a certain extent, reveal the radical element of Islam and will possibly force us to do something because Islam Islam will not get better. I consider Islam is sort of like a big bully at school. When you go to school, the bully asks for your lunch money. You give him your lunch money, and you think you have peace. In other words, you don't talk about Islam, you don't criticize Islam, you don't do anything that provokes people, and you think you have peace. The next day you go to school, and he demands your lunch money and your jacket. So sooner or later, you have to say no. And sooner or later, you have to stand up. And sooner or later, he will be provoked. Of course, there is always the danger if you stand up to the bully that he will end up beating you up. But you have to do that. And I think that we have tippy-toed around Islam so long, and that is why we have the problem now. I think if we would have stood up to them many generations ago, then maybe we wouldn't have the problem right now. So I think, of course, it is a very, very difficult situation. I just don't see Islam improving unless we do make a radical stand against Islam.
Mm-hmm. What do you got on the cooker? What do you got planned?
Well, the very next thing that we have planned, on the 10th, we're going to be in Dearborn, Michigan. We've gotten several phone calls or emails from parents up there. We're going to be demonstrating in front of the Edsel Ford High School. They have a lot of problem there with bullying. The Muslims who are there, pretty much in the majority now, the Muslim kids in the school there, they bully, beat up the Christian kids, the Jewish kids, to the extent that the Jewish youth are afraid to wear their Jewish garb. They've installed cameras into the schools, but they have not done very much good because the Muslim kids have found like the blind spots and they wait on the Christian kids. So we're going to go up there in front of the Edsel Ford High School and demonstrate against bullying, what's going on there at the high school. And then a day or two later, we're going to be up in Toronto, Canada, with the Hindus there, because the Hindu community has been historically, I believe, the major religious group that has been persecuted by the Muslims. A year ago, I met with several Hindu leaders up in New York City, and they told me anyway, according to their figures, that Islam has killed 60 million Hindus. So on October, either the 11th or 12th, I think the exact date's not set, we're going to be up there standing with the Hindu community.
Okay, and if any listeners want to keep abreast of Stand Up America Now and you, how could they do that? What's the best way for them to do that?
I guess the best thing is just simply to go to the website, standupamericanow.org. They can also call us here at area code 352-371-2487.
Okay, and also you said you have a Facebook page. Is that linked to your website, too?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it should be. But it's also above the same name. I think it's called Stand Up America with Dr. Terry Jones.
Pastor Terry Jones, the president and founder of Stand Up America Now. Again, I want to thank you so much for the time you took out explaining all this to the listeners. Very interesting stuff and a lot for listeners to think about. And certainly, you're not somebody that they should just poo-poo and discount and say this guy doesn't know what he's talking about, because you obviously have a lot of knowledge. You've thought about these issues and looking forward to talking to you in the future.
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you very much for having me.